VS founders got equity back into the company, and then 2022 was the acquisition by Swiggy, and I think that to us, it was very satisfying from that perspective, and especially considering that.
Have you ever struggled with turning your long-form content into usable content? So super thrilled to announce that today's episode sponsor is Rikaz Studios, which helps podcasters and creators turn their podcasts and videos into short video clips and show notes and more, all with the help of AI. So visit Rikaz.studio today to try it out. So hi everyone, welcome to the podcast. So today I'm super stoked to announce that we have Ankit Mehrotra of Dine Out who's going to be joining us on the podcast today. So hi Ankit. So firstly, I'd like to start off with from zero to acquisition by Swiggy. So what does it take for an Indian company to get acquired in this market and in this day and age?
First of all, let me start by saying a warm hi to you, Rohit. Thanks for having me over, and warm hi to all your listeners. It's been an interesting journey with Dine Out, right? So we're probably one of the oldest sort of food tech startups in India. Been around since 2011, right? So it's been a hell of a journey for the last 13 years. And acquisition is always a very interesting sort of an outcome for a company, for the founders, for the investors, for the shareholders, for everyone. And the interesting thing about Dine Out is that we actually got acquired not once but twice. So first we had an acquisition in 2014 by Times Internet, but then we just felt that as founders that we'd not done the entire journey and we'd not done justice to the actual product that we're trying to build. So somewhere along the way, we as founders got equity back into the company, and then 2022 was the acquisition by Swiggy, and I think that to us, it was very satisfying from that perspective, and especially considering the fact that we were coming right off COVID, right, when the business was down to zero, difficult time. And so the bounce back after COVID and was truly phenomenal. And then the acquisition. So happy to get into more details. But it's actually a surreal feeling and a great outcome.
Super interesting. And that's always something that's amazing to hear, when startup founders and their thing get acquired. So could you just talk us through the process, what was the decision-making process behind not going with the Times of Internet acquisition? What was that for you as a founder to not take up that offer and to just keep going on building until you get acquired by somebody else?
I think there was a slight clarification there. So we actually did in 2014 get acquired by Times Internet, but then we managed to spin it out as a separate company, build it back ourselves, and they were investors, and then the acquisition with Swiggy happened. But nevertheless, I think I remember still those days, as a founder, when you start up a company, I think the acquisition is the last thing in your mind, and this especially going back all the way to 2011-12, there was no startup ecosystem per se, and at that point in time we just wanted to build a business. And that's what we set out doing. We'd raise some money in our initial days, building a product, building a service. And then when the acquisition offer from Times Internet came, we were really surprised by it because we never thought that, that's what the eventual outcome is going to be. But we were pleasantly surprised. Took us a while to sort of deliberate, get the offer in line, get everything, get all our bases covered, and eventually that acquisition happened in 2014. But the great thing about Times Internet and working with them was that we were able to still operate as an independent entity. And normally, it's very normal for a founder to sort of work for a couple of years and then sort of leave and do something else. But however, we've been in this journey since 2011. 2014, 15, 16. Now we'd seen that the market was opening up, people were dining out like crazy. The app ecosystem had just taken off, and there was a huge sort of there was a lot of demographic changes that were going on happening in India at that point in time. People had more disposable incomes, people were spending a lot more, and we knew that dining out per se was going to benefit massively as more and more people start dining out. And we just felt that, our journey was a bit incomplete. And hence, instead of deciding to sort of leave in 2014, 15, 16, a couple of years after we got acquired, we decided to double down. And, you know, we got equity back into the company, did some sort of a management buyout, etc. And we again started running Dynaut independently, with Times Internet being the largest investor. And I think from there on, that journey, you know, the next few years was really interesting and exciting. I think 2017, 18, 19, like, you know, we saw Indians dine out like crazy. People were going out more. People were experimenting more. People were eating. So there's this huge influx of restaurants that opened up. So overall, the economy was just growing, and people were dining out like a lot more. And then we come to 2020, when you can imagine, you know, the first wave of COVID hit, and all of a sudden the restaurant industry shut down, right? And this has never happened before in the history of the world, where, you know, even during World War I and World War II, restaurants always were operational. So this was completely unprecedented when restaurants had shut. So all of a sudden our business went to zero. However, we took that opportunity during the COVID times to actually, you know, go back to the drawing board, build a better product, cut down a lot of our costs. And when we came out of COVID after the first wave, within 6 months, we were back to our original numbers. And then the second wave happened. And obviously, you know, now things were getting a bit difficult, because all of a sudden it felt like you don't know when or what is going to be the end of this, and how is the world going to get back to normal. However, we all, as Dynaut, we always felt that whenever that happened, it's going to be a story of massive consumption. It's going to be a story of people, of revenge consumption, revenge dining, people trying to make up for a lot of the spent, a lot of the lost time over the last couple of years. And hence, post wave two, which was April 21, I think when the market started opening up in around May, June 21, from there on, since till December 21, it was just an insane sort of spurt of crazy growth in the dining out sector. We were up 6x of our you know, pre-COVID numbers, and that's when the you know, that's when things got really interesting, when, you know, we started talking to a bunch of players who were really interested in the business, because everyone now wanted a piece of dining out all of a sudden, because, you know, they were seeing the massive growth that we were having. And we had multiple conversations and negotiations and talks, and eventually, you know, we finalized a deal with Swiggy and got acquired by them in July 2022. So obviously, you know, just 2 years back, in the middle of COVID, we would have never thought that could be a potential outcome in 2 years' time. But I think, as I said, right, it was a testament to the fact that, you know, as a company, we sort of survived those difficult times. Testament to the fact that, you know, we had a great set of employees who managed to stay with us, and testament to the fact that, you know, we took the we during those difficult times, we were able to sort of double down, reduce our burn, and just build a better company, and eventually we had a great outcome.
That's an amazing journey, and you have like almost a decade of experience in the kind of dining space, eating out space, F&B space, kind of. So my next question is more like, so what does it take to, like, you said you raised some money as well. So, like, what did it take to raise that money from VCs or investors or whoever was giving you the money? Like, what does it take to do that? And also, what have you been up to since, like, since Dynaut got acquired by Swiggy? Like, what have you been up to? Like, I think the audience would love to know that. And I'm also personally curious to know, like, what all you've been up to.
No, so let's look at raising money first. See, as, you know, as founders, obviously you start off a business with the objective of building something big and trying to solve a problem that exists with hopefully a large number of people are solving. And I think once you take care of those few fundamental, like, you know, for example, in the founding team, do you have a good founding team? Do you have a good initial set of people? Are you in the right industry? Is the problem large enough to solve? So I think there are some basic checklists that as founders we need to sort of take care of. And once that typically happens, I think in today's day and environment, raising money has probably become a lot easier. In fact, you know, we all know what's been happening the last few years. There's been this massive influx of capital in India in startups, right? So I think when I look back at 10 years, you know, at the beginning of my journey to now, I think there's been a huge shift in the way startups are viewed, in the way, you know, the mind shift change has happened. I truly think this is the decade of startups for India, right? So raising money has become a lot more easier and a lot more accessible now than what it was 10 years back. However, some fundamentals do not change. So as this is what I mentioned earlier, right? Is the problem that you're working on large enough? Do you have the right set of people on board to help you solve that problem? So provided you take care of a couple of those, you know, a few of those checkpoints, I think it's probably the best time to be a startup founder in India. Yeah, and having said that, I don't think so. The acquisition for us meant the end of our journey. So, you know, we're still with Swiggy and still trying to grow the dining out business. From the way we look at it, right, Swiggy and Zomato have built the food delivery business over the last few years. And now the focus on dining out is there like never before. You know, it's a growing segment. And more people in India are dining out. And I think when we look at some of what's happened in other parts of the world, right, we all understand the potential of where and how large this could get. I think now is just the time to double down on dining out as a category. And that's what I'm still focused on building with Swiggy. However, having said that, right, on a personal level, so I love giving back to the startup, you know, the startup community and the startup ecosystem. I've been personally an angel investor since 2014. That was when we did our first angel investment, and you know, have had the opportunity to look at the Indian startup ecosystem very closely over the last 10 years. Have done multiple investments. Some of those investments have now grown on to become very large companies. You know, just it's in fact it's great to be able to give back to the ecosystem with whether it's with you know, funding startups or as an angel investor, or even you know, mentoring some founders, giving back anyway. And I'm also in the process of launching my own fund, you know, so that's something that would be really interesting as well.
Yeah, for sure. So let's dive into that a bit. Like, what do you look for as an angel investor? So you're like named as one of the top kind of founder operator angels by one of the fellow podcasters out there. So he compiled a list and your name was on that list. So what do you kind of look for as an angel investor, and like, where do you see the space? Like, what are some of the trends you're looking at in the space? Like, yeah, just what are you thinking about angel investing at the moment?
See, to be honest, I think the way I look at it is not about angel investing per se, but more about, you know, backing the right set of founders who can go on and build large companies. And one of the first things that I always look at is the team, right? It's always about the people, especially see at an early stage investing. It's never about the product or the service. It's always about the people. Because from our personal journey, we've seen that, you know, ideas change, businesses pivot, a lot of things happen. But the founders have to be resilient enough to be able to withstand that change and actually make the right decision for the business. So for me, it's always been about people first. The other thing that I really think, you know, what differentiates sort of operator angels from, you know, other people and professional money is that, you know, we've been out there, we've been on the ground, built our businesses, you know, we know some of the challenges that can come. And I think the advantage that I probably, you know, would have, or, you know, or how a founder would benefit is that, you know, whatever or something that he's working on, maybe I can help them not make the mistakes maybe which I did while during my early days, or if I can help them solve some of the problems that they're facing and reduce maybe the time taken to solve something by which would normally take 6 to 9 months, but to, you know, 2 to 3 months, just because by being a lot more hands-on with the founder. That's I think that's what really excites me and interests me. And that's what we, or me personally, you know, I hope to contribute to towards any startup that has, you know, that whether I've invested in, whether I'm mentoring, whether I'm an advisor, whatever. So I think that's the objective I have.
That's really amazing to hear. Like, so let's dive more into like this founder, operator, angel investor kind of scene that you have going on. So like, what are some of the key things that great founders have in common that you've observed, you've seen their pitches, or like, yeah, could you just share a bit on that front?
No, absolutely. As I said, right, I've been investing since the last 10 years, so I've had the pleasure of knowing a lot of the young founders out there, pleasure of working with a lot of early stage companies. And I think the one thing that's always sort of been common, or something that I look for, is does the founder, will he be resilient enough to actually go through the difficult times? Because see, what's happening these days is that startups are made to look cool, happening, hot, etc., right? But no one actually talks about the founder's journey of how difficult it can be, of how lonely it can be, and also how taxing it can be mentally and physically, right? As founders, there's a lot of ups and downs that someone has to go through. And I think the number one thing that we look, or personally I look at, is that will the founder be resilient enough to withstand or go through some of those changes required? Will he be smart enough to decide when to pivot the business? And those are some of the things that, those are the softer aspects that you sort of tend to pick upon, rather than rather than anything else. And probably it just comes from meeting enough number of people out there and understanding their thought process, their motivations about why they're doing what they're doing. Because as I said, right, it's not easy to do a startup. Either you're doing straight after college, or you quit your job and doing it. So whatever the motivation is, it's important to understand that. So from a founder's perspective, from my perspective, ensuring that the founder is resilient, would have the wherewithal to go through difficult times, that's the first thing that I look at. The second thing also, obviously, to understand is that while 90% of the founders I've worked with at an early stage figure out, or the products pivot, I think, have they picked the right industry? Is the industry big enough? Is the market size big enough? Because as founders, right, we typically tend to start up when we realize that we personally go through a problem, and then we are biased enough to think that, if I'm going through this, if I'm facing this problem, then there would be other people out there like me facing the problem. And people do not actually do a correct market estimation or how big it could get. So I think understanding the industry sector, etc., is really important as well. So I think that these are a couple of things that I look at very closely from a founder, from a startup perspective, especially when I'm looking to invest some money.
For sure, those are some really actionable tips, I think, that you've shared for the audience, like looking, understanding the market, and yeah, so those are some really great tips. And so my next question is more like about partnerships. Let's talk about partnerships in general. So how does one start partnering with phenomenal companies, and like what could you share on that front?
See, to be honest, I think as a founder slash startups perspective, right, it's important to get great partners out there which will help you sort of grow the business, obviously, right? And at Dynao, that was one of the first things that we did, right? In fact, our first acquisition with Times Internet actually happened not because we want an acquisition, but because they were our partners. So they had a platform called Time City, which was a listing platform. We had Dynote, which was a reservations engine, and we put our reservation button on Time City and started sending them, started fulfilling their traffic that was sort of coming on their website. So that partnership turned out to be a great lever to from an acquisition perspective. But I think all or most great partnership, like most startups, actually should, or I'm assuming, would build a product where they would need distribution, and basically getting on with partners helps you provide that distribution, right? And that's one of the most important things, because the main core is that the cost of acquisition of users today has become so expensive. And I know startups are spending fortunes on digital marketing, etc., to acquire users. But partnerships provide you an opportunity to target the users of another company or another service or another product which have already gone through that journey and acquired users. So why not do that? Why do you want to reinvent the wheel sometimes? So for me personally, we've always at Dineout looked at partnerships as a very important tool to help us acquire users, but also to help us sort of give credibility, right? For any startup, partnering with a great brand is a sign of credibility as well. And I think for Dynar, that moment happened in, I would say, 2017, when we partnered with HDFC Bank, which is the largest bank in India, right? And we started running the dining program, and we launched an exclusive dining program for HDFC users on the Dynar app, right? And that actually gave us a lot of credibility into the market. From a user's perspective, from an investor's perspective, all of that. So I think partnerships play a very important and a huge role in ensuring that the product is successful. But also it's actually the first measure of, I would say, or the dipstick of success, because if you're not able to find partners who want to partner with you, that means have you built a good enough product? In fact, you know, that's one of the first questions I would ask someone, because at the end of the day, having partners validate what you've been doing as part of the journey, what you've been building. And I think for me personally, when I'm evaluating startups as well, at some later stages, knowing that they have a great set of partners who are actually upselling their products or giving their products to the set of users or just doing a barter, whatever it is, right? It's just a huge validation. And I think it's very important today, in today's sort of day and age and the current ecosystem that we're in, to build multiple partnerships.
For sure, that was a great, great point to end on. So it was an absolute pleasure and an honor to host you in the podcast today. And so now, do share like how the audience can like reach you, how they can like pitch you, or like anything you want to share. Like, now's your stage.
Yeah. No, absolutely, Rui. As I said, thanks for having me over. It was a pleasure speaking to you. And I think LinkedIn is the best tool to sort of reach out to me. I'm always accessible on LinkedIn. Send me a message. I always aim to reply. Yeah. So look forward to probably speaking to you a few very soon.
For sure. I think you have a wealth of experience. And I know the audience is going to learn a ton from you today. And it was amazing to talk to you today. And I know this was like a 1 year in the making. Like, we had planned this like last year, and then some issues came up, and then we are here today talking. So that's amazing. So thank you so much for coming on today.
No, absolutely, Rui. As I said, you know, better late than never. So great speaking to you. Thanks for having me, and all the best. Thanks.